thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole. Here, my boy Will T. Ray Jeezy's out. Let me patch in Will T. real quick. Like, what's going on, Will?
Nothing, my brother. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Copacetic, man. We got a jam-packed show. So let me make sure I read out all the information. Make sure you the Urban Sports Scene now is part of the Sports Journey family. So make sure you check us out at sportsjourney.com. You'll find all kinds of sports content, especially for your DMV sports team. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here is what we have on tap. Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton will join the show to discuss the start of the Washington Wizards restart season at 8:20. We'll talk about Washington football team running back Bryce Love finally being healthy. Sports Journey's Washington football insider Lake Lewis will join us to discuss this. At 8:35, we'll talk about the first couple of weeks of the NBA restart. Finally, at 8:45, Talk Nets' Kevin Nibley will join the show to discuss the start of the Washington National season. But first, right now, we have Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton on the line. What's up, Troy? Long time no hear from.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you all living out here? Hopefully everybody's staying safe in this global pandemic that we have going on, but at least sports are back.
Yeah, at least sports are back. Will T's been a big fan of the bubble, right, Will?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Basketball, literally from the afternoon until late at night, it's been a fantastic thing for me to just sit back and watch basketball. So I'm in sports heaven.
I will say this, though. I just watched an afternoon basketball game. It took me back to my youth. Like, there used to be games in the afternoon, and I was like, wow, like that kind of – it feels natural again. I will say that much about the bubble. But Troy, during the NBA restart, the Washington Wizards have gone 0-3. What have you noticed with this 0-3 team without Bradley Beal?
Well, the first thing that I noticed is that this team really hasn't had the offensive potency that they exhibited over the course of the NBA regular season, but before the season was suspended. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, Bradley Beal and Davis Bertans both opting out of going to the Orlando bubble. But I honestly believe that, the Wizards organization and Wizards fans are a little bit disappointed with the level of production mm-hmm. that they've gotten from their cast of young players, specifically Rui Hachimura, mm-hmm. who has been put in a different role that he's not used to. You know, he's normally used to playing off of Brad and not being the focal point of opposing defenses. And so now he finds himself in a position where, you know, guys are double-teaming him, and he's really not able to get his shots off, and he's not really at that stage of his career where he's able to make the players around him better. So this has really kind of left the Wizards offense kind of stagnant, and it makes it really hard to kind of evaluate what it is that we're seeing from them.
Mm. So Troy, like, so Rui, do you feel like Rui's not that guy that, you know, to, you know, being able to be, not say take over a game, because I think that's putting too much on him early, but you're not happy with this ISO game or being able to, you know, high, you know, from the high post, or you're not seeing any development in terms of his offensive game in that element?
Well, I think that I'm not seeing that development in his offensive game, and it's not to say that he's not that player. I think that he can grow to become that player, but it's just a drastic difference from the role that he had during the regular season mm-hmm. Before the NBA restart. You know, before, Rui was mainly a finisher. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he would be a guy where, you know, they would run offense. They would have, you know, Ish Smith and Brad Beal. You know, they would run this intricate dribble handoff type of offense. And that would basically lead to Rui having one-on-one matchups on the
mm-hmm,
block.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that because Brad and Bertans is not there to space the floor, and Brad's not there to, you know, take those dribble handoffs and create offense, that leaves him in a position where he doesn't have one-on-one matchups. So he has to go up against, you know, every time he gets the ball in the post, he's got the wing defenders on the opposing team are leaving their men and doubling down on Rui. Mm. And they're leaving their men because they have no faith in Wizards wing players hitting shots. So why would they guard their men? What's not being in the basket?
Mm. And Wilson, you got a question?
So I'm not going to be as harsh on Rui Hachimura, but there is one guy that I thought, well, what I heard coming into, you know, this second half of the season in the bubble would be impact player, especially with Davis Bertans and Bradley Beal gone, and that's Isaac Bonga. Can you talk to us a little bit more about him in his game over these first three games?
Well, I have to say I've been kind of highly disappointed with what I've seen from Bonga, and that's mainly because of the potential flashes that he showed in the scrimmage games but before the actual seeding game started back up. You know, Bonga was running up and down the court, and he looked like a guy who belongs in the NBA just from an athletic standpoint, because, you know, he's 6'8", with such a long, wiry frame, and he has such great defensive instincts. But what I've noticed about him in this restart is that, I mean, he has a long way to go in developing the offensive skills that would make him be a decent rotation player in the NBA. There have been countless times where, you know, he's gotten a rebound and dribbled the ball up the court, and I'm like, all right, let's see what you can do, Bonga. And he literally falls. Like, he's done that like 5 times. Like, and he's like, falls down to the ground, lost the ball, hits the ball. Like, there are basic things about, like, his offensive skill set that I think he has a long way to go in order for him to be that potential 3-and-D player that I think that a lot of people believe that he can be.
Let's talk about another player who I think, for me, his play has been kind of a shining star for the Wizards during their first three games, and that's Jerome Robinson. I believe he was drafted by the Clippers out of Boston College, mm-hmm. first round in 2018. I think he was the 13th overall pick. Going forward, with his flash so far, do you think he could potentially develop, carve out a space on this roster going forward for next year and be a contributor to the team?
I definitely think that there is a role for Jerome Robinson on the future Wizards, strictly because he can shoot the basketball. Mm. And so when you start talking about being able to space the floor with John and Brad, you know, basically being able to run the show next year, and you're going to have Davis Bertans, who's going to be able to stand 30 feet out and draw gravity away from the defense, I think that another guy on the floor who has the ability to make shots is kind of the perfect complement player. And Jerome Robinson is showing that he can do it. He's showing that he can make shots in common situations, that, you know, he can handle the ball a little bit. He can put the ball on the floor. He can catch and shoot. He can shoot off of the dribble. I think that he's a guy who, with the way that the Wizards will be constructed next season, I think he's a guy that will definitely have a role on that team going forward.
So Troy had this one question, because I'm going to go back to Rui. Do you think, because I feel like, because I watched Rui in college, and his game is totally different from what he was in college in the pros. Like, in the pros, you can run off, he can run offense, and he can kind of set people up from the high post. That's what he did in Gonzaga. So, like, when I watch him with the Wizards, it's a totally different situation. Do you think that, to your point, that Scott Brooks not utilizing Rui during the regular season that way kind of hindered him now?
I think that, basically, what I think is that the Wizards have a short-term plan for Rui, and they have mm-hmm. a long-term plan mm-hmm. for what it is they want to see from Rui as far as his development is concerned. And so what I think that the Wizards did was that they didn't put too much on his plate to begin the season. Mm-hmm. So when they started out like this, because a lot of people didn't even think that Rui Hachimura would even start to come into the season. True. But like the way that he has flashed from, you know, training camp on, he's shown that he can finish the basketball. He can finish around the rim. Mm-hmm. If he gets his one-on-one matchup on his guy, he can pull up. He can shoot jumpers. Mm-hmm. Right now, Rui is a finisher.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that they had ever planned for him to be much more than that coming into this season. Now, obviously, their long-term plan would be different, and they obviously want him to develop. And, you know, there are different things that he has to learn as far as just basketball instincts and being able to read defenses and just having better court vision. Because mm-hmm. one of the things that I've noticed watching Rui in this restart is that too many times, like, he'll get the ball and he'll have tunnel vision. Like, he'll get a rebound and he'll push the ball up the court, and like teammates will be open and he just won't pass the basketball. And I don't think this is because he's selfish. I honestly don't think that he sees it.
No, I agree. I just feel like this is not the same dude I saw in Gonzaga. Like, what they ran for him in Gonzaga and the stuff that he was doing, he was finding guys open from the high post, though. He did a lot of it from the high post. He was like a facilitator even out of that position. They used him. He was like a point forward. So when I watch him with the Wizards, and I know the NBA defenses are totally different, so don't get it twisted, like in terms of when they bring the double team and when they decide to come out and double. But at the same time, it's like, this is not the dude that I saw in Gonzaga, at least off of just a basketball intellect type of thing.
Yeah, I think that a lot of that has to do with Rui just going through this adjustment, because we have to remember that he started playing basketball extremely late. Mm-hmm. And so he really, like, has not seen, like, all of the possible basketball scenarios on the court. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I think that it's about just a recognition. Like, in his brain, he might do something, or he might want to do something, but his brain and his body aren't, like, working. They aren't coinciding right now. And it's just not really happening in a timely manner. And I think that Rui, one of the things that I think that he struggled with mightily in his rookie season, whether that be in the beginning part of the season and even in the restart, is that he struggled with real NBA length. And so that's why I think when you talk about what he did in college athletes are different than NBA athletes.
Very true.
And so Rui, he's a guy who, a lot of his shot attempts at the rim get blocked because he's not aware of the length of the opposing defender. A lot of his passes that he tries to make get tipped because he's not conscious and aware of the length of opposing defenses. So I think that there's an adjustment period that he has to go through with playing with, a superior athletes. And, as Jay Billis would say, those Wings fans are out there, and I think it's kind of affected them.
No, that's facts. That's facts. Straight facts. All right, so you're listening to the Urban Sportsing part of Sports Journey. Right now we are – right now we have Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton on the line. So, Troy, if this team had Bradley Beal, do you think they start the season 0-3? The restart 0-3?
Definitely not. I think that, they almost beat the Nets the other day. Well, they almost beat them. They were competitive in that game. But when you look at the Phoenix Suns and what Devin Booker is being able to do and boost the morale of his team, I think that the Wizards were robbed of an opportunity to be able to do the same thing. That's because Bradley Beal, I don't know what happened. All I know is that the team plane was supposed to leave on the 4th of July, and they woke up that morning and they had a Zoom press conference where they said Beal wasn't going to get on the plane. Mm. So I don't know what happened. They said, he had an injury that, it wasn't reported the whole season, but his shoulder injury was too severe for him to go down to Orlando. And so I think that really robbed the Wizards of this opportunity because, this team without Bradley Beal on it is a glorified summer league roster. For them to not, they have a lot of players who are put in positions that they normally wouldn't be put in because Brad was literally, 60% of their offense for the entirety of the season. So it would just be totally different if Bill had decided to go down to Orlando.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start to shift our view, because I think going 0-3 in the bubble, 8 games, 5 more games left, you're pretty much out of any contention for that play in playoff game. So let's start to shift our focus to next year. Mahimi comes off of the books. John Wall is starting to look healthy. Do you think that the Wizards will go? What do you think would be a fair market price that the Wizards would think would be a fair market price for Davis Bertans? Because he's drawing a lot of interest.
Yeah, it's really tough to say at this point, just because it's really the uncertainty of what the NBA salary cap is going to be because of not only everything that's going on with the pandemic and them missing a lot of revenue from the games, from missed games from that, but then also Daryl Morey last year, his tweets about Hong Kong literally cost the NBA $200+ million, and so there are a lot of questions about what the NBA salary cap will look like. And so I think that the Wizards are in a good position to be able to get him for an affordable rate, just because I don't believe that a lot of teams out there are going to have the requisite salary cap space to try to sign away Bertans. So whereas in a normal, if the China thing didn't happen and the pandemic thing didn't happen, I'd say that Bertans would probably be looking at around like between $15 to $17 million a year.
Mm. And good God.
I think that, yeah, exactly. But I think that now he would probably be looking at somewhere around 10 to 12.
Oh, that's nice.
I think that but like I said, that's going to greatly fluctuate based upon what the revenue ends up being from this NBA restart. You know, I know everybody's watching these games, so the money might be rolling in.
Yeah.
You never know.
They should be getting the bag.
I honestly believe that Bertans is going to be back on a fair market rate value deal.
Let me rewind just one comment you said. You said if all things being equal, the season had played out like it should have without the COVID-19.
The pandemic, yeah.
The pandemic. 15 to 17 million for Davis Bertans?
Yeah, that's about right, though.
Yeah, I honestly believe like there are guys with less skills than him who get paid more money than that.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, but I guess.
Let me ask you this question. Okay. So then directly compare this to a guy who the Wizards, I know Wizards Twitter is really caught up on losing Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre signed for $15 million per season last year.
Yeah.
Davis Bertans is unequivocally a more valuable basketball player right now than Kelly Oubre. So he should get paid just as much, if not more. Like, right. It's not about what you think he should make. Like, it's about what the market dictates that he should make.
I understand that. No, I understand the economics of it all, but I guess my concern as a fan or as a follower of the team is you're just getting out of the Jan Mahimi contract, which really you didn't get your value for Mahimi, right? So, and I'm not saying that Bertans is Mahimi, but if we're just looking at Bertans' game, we're looking at what he brings to the team. You know, I think you put yourself back in the same position with paying a guy like Bertans, the same thing you're going to pay what you paid Mahimi. And I think, you know, it made that contract may not be the best value for you going forward. That's just my opinion.
I think it's an apples and oranges situation because Jan Mahimi is a prehistoric big man whose game does not correlate with the way that the game is being played today.
Mm-hmm.
So when they signed Mahimi to that contract in 2016, but as soon as he put the ink to the paper, that was a mistake. But Davis Bertans, his game directly correlates to how the NBA is being played today. And it's not even about him hitting and making shots. It's about the fact that when Davis Bertans is on the floor, when he stands 30 feet away from the basket, he commands attention from the opposing team's defenders, and that opens up the floor for the rest of the team. So his importance to the team is not just in so, like, oh, him hitting and making shots. Like, he provides a lot of value for the Wizards strictly based. I mean, this guy is literally one of the best shooters in the NBA.
Hmm.
And we're talking about a league where there's so much value is put on three-point shooting and so much value is put on spacing, having proper spacing on the floor. Bertans is the perfect – when you look at Wall and Beal, the perfect guy that you would want next to Wall and Beal is a guy who can shoot from 30 feet.
Hey, Troy, man.
I understand that. Me personally, you know, I'm kind of.
If you have that opinion, so they should just let him go.
I'm not saying let him go. I would have traded him at the trade deadline.
It depends on what type of offers they were getting. Because I'm hearing that they weren't getting too great of an offer. Is Davis Bertans? Would you have traded Davis Bertans for, let's say, the 18th pick in this year's draft?
I don't think
that's good value.
It depends, though. But hey, Troy, remember?
The only thing is, you know, without knowing who, you know, without having to read on who, you know, would be coming out of the draft, is, you know, it's kind of hit or miss. But like I said, I'm, you know,
exactly for, hit or miss with Bertans, you already know what he is. He's already been in the NBA, played in the Spurs system, played winning basketball before. He shoots at a 40%+ rate from 3-point range. I know what Davis Bertans is.
I know that he's off. I know he's had two ACL injuries. that's one of the, for me, that's one of the reasons why I'm hesitant, that I would be hesitant. But like I said, I wouldn't be mad if the Wizards re-signed him, but you know, I'm just a little skeptical and hesitant, you know, going into, but investing that much in him.
We can talk about this all day, but we got to go to another segment. Hey, Troy, man, I'm grateful for you being on, man. I want to get you on again, man. Before I let you go, man, how can folks catch you on social media?
Man, they can catch me on social media. On Twitter, my handle is at Troy Halliburton. That's TROYHALIBUR. Just recently, I started doing some sports betting handicapping.
Wow, you're on
predictions
that? Well, okay.
With the Action Network. So I want everybody to be able to go check out my work at the Action Network. Troy Halliburton, you can just search it. I post all of my stuff on my social media feed. So, and this is a big deal because, you know, the sports book at Capital One Arena just opened up yesterday.
True.
And so I went up there, placed a couple bets. if there's going to be people out here in the DMV, if you're going to be going up there placing your bets, you might want to check out and get some information for some sharks.
Oh, my man, Troy. Hey, Troy, you know, I appreciate you. I hope to have you on again, man. Real soon. Bryce Love is finally healthy. Sports Journey's Washington football team's insider Lake Lewis will join us to discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene, now part of Sports Journey with Wawole and Will T. Ray Jeezy's out. All right, right now we have, I'm going to patch him in. Patch the fellas in first. Patch him in. All right, we good now. Right now we have former USA Today's senior Washington football team reporter and current Sports Journey's Washington football team insider, Lake Lewis Jr. on the line. What's going on, Lake?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
We good.
Doing good. How about yourself, man?
Hanging in there, you know, just trying to stay safe out in these streets, you know.
I know that's right. All right, Lake, man, let's get right into it. It looks like Washington football team running back Bryce Love is healthy. What does that mean for the running back room?
It means there's going to have some really good competition. And, you know, this is a guy that I think a lot of people have forgotten how to. And, you know, when you look at Christian McCaffrey, you know, what he's doing with the Carolina Panthers right now, perhaps one of the top, you know, two, three backs in all of football, clearly the best all-around back in football. You think about, he came from Stanford, and Bryce Love followed him up and actually was looking better than Christian McCaffrey,
yeah.
You know, at Stanford. I mean, when Bryce Love was at Stanford, guys, he had two 250-yard rushing games. He had a 300-yard game, which still is the Stanford record to this very day. And in his 12 games played, in 2017, 11 of those games he rushed for over, 100-plus, had 1,000 yards after 5 games. So, runner-up to the Heisman Trophy. I mean, he was a dominant football player. And then, of course, in his last game at Stanford, you know, he tore his knee up. And I think a lot of people have forgotten before that injury, this guy wouldn't have gone in the fourth round. He was going to go early in the first round. You know, and now he's healthy. And if he can, you know, basically get 90% of what he had at Stanford, the Redskins might have another back that I don't know if people thought was going to be the starter, but he could end up being the featured back in this offense.
Well, so you got questions?
I slipped up late.
Late, you just watch the football team.
Watch the football team, man.
Oh, the football team.
Hey, Wilton, you got a question?
You know, I have been saying to myself over and over and over to keep saying that. It just doesn't have that ring yet.
It will, though, man. It will, though, right? It will eventually.
Let me ask you a question, kind of big piggybacking off of your comments. So Washington has two young backs that are coming off of major knee injuries, a 35-year-old running back. Mm-hmm. Why should fans be optimistic or excited about what the potential of this run game in this upcoming season?
I think you could look at the 35-year-old Adrian Peterson and just see what a true ultimate professional is. You know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, when his time comes for that. But he's also a guy that came back from a bad knee injury and had his best season ever the following year. And I think if that doesn't tell you that it can be done by the man in the building, you know, for these two young backs, we're talking about Darius Geis and Bryce Love, then I don't know who else can show them the way. And I think that they know, you know, what they're capable of. I think they both feel slighted, you know, as far as their spots, their draft spots. And, you know, I think this is good competition in the room. Don't forget about Peyton Barber and J.D. McKissick either, because those guys can ball as well. So this is just a dynamic room, man. And years past, you know, you kept four guys. So who's going to be the fourth player, you know, on the roster this year, the third and fourth players? I think it's safe to say that and Adrian are locks. I can't be. But the other two guys, you know, I really think it's probably going to boil down to being McKissick and Bryce Love, but they're very similar. So this is going to be a nice thing to sit back and watch unfold.
You definitely. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene now, part of Sports Journey. Right now, we are rapping with Sports Journey's Washington football team insider Lake Lewis Jr. See, it's starting to be natural to me now, too, Will. I can say it now without stepping up.
I do have one more question for you, Lake, and then I'm going to let Wally get his question. Second round pick, I forgot his name, Gibson, correct?
Yeah, Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Antonio Gibson.
Mm-hmm. Antonio Gibson. I know in we heard from Ron Rivera and also Smith, the GM, that they thought they saw a lot of Christian McCaffrey in his game. Mm-hmm. Where does he fit in that running back situation, or is he kind of like a hybrid player for Washington in this upcoming season?
See, that's a great question, because, you know, I remember seeing him at Memphis several times, and I remember he carved up my Penn State Nittany Lions, you know, 2 years ago in a bowl game. And but he did it on the outside. You know, he played a lot of wide receiver, and I liken him to being a wide receiver more than a running back. But he's capable. He's a guy that can do a lot of different things. Like Swiss Army knife. He's a versatile player. I just think that because of the injury to Kelvin Harmon on the outside, I think that kind of opens it up a little bit more for Antonio Gibson to be moved outside, or just play up maybe a little bit more wide receiver than they had envisioned. It's not a bad thing. I mean, it just means that you're going to have room, another body in your backfield, because if he's strictly a running back, man, I mean, that's five running backs that are good, maybe six. So, I like his game quite a bit. I definitely think he's a guy that they're going to put in different positions, and he's got great speed, really speed, and he's a power player. You know, he's not, you know, a small guy by any means. I mean, he can get up in the hole if he has to, or he'll run by you. So they're just going to have to find ways to get him out on the field and let him do what he can do.
So like, do you feel that this staff is you know, has a lot of love for Bryce Love? That sounds kind of funny.
I think anybody's on this roster, Dwayne Haskins, I mean, whoever's on this roster is going to have to earn their keep. And that's all we've ever wanted, you know, covering this team for years. There were some guys that were handed things that prematurely that hadn't earned it. And this isn't singling out any one player. It was several guys. You saw habits in practice. You saw habits, you know, out on the field where they knew they were safe. They were comfortable. And I've always said the worst thing you can do is let somebody that hasn't earned anything feel comfortable, because they're definitely not going to want it.
Yeah.
So now you're in a situation where everybody's got to compete. They got to bang heads literally to see who's going to be the best 11 on each side of the ball. I just think that this is going to be a hungry looking football team. And we haven't seen that in a long time.
And Will mentioned something that's real interesting in terms of just I'm going to use Geis, a guy who's coming off a knee injury and has had knee injury issues. And, you know, you got Bryce Love, who's coming off, you know, a knee injury that stems back from college. But, you know, when fans look at Bryce Love, they see that guy from Stanford. And, you know, we can look at what Geis did at LSU. But if these two are both healthy, who's really the better back? Because a lot of fans think that, you know, coming out of Stanford, Bryce Love was better than Geis. A lot of fans think that.
I think most people would have said Bryce was, you know, and that's not knocking Darius because he's a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But I just think as far as just sheer versatility, Bryce was doing everything. I mean, he was a guy that could hit the hole on you, hit the seam. He was in your secondary before you looked up. You know, his background is he was a sprinter at one point. So, you know, he's a guy that if he gets a step on you, it's over. No one's walking him down. He was that dynamic. And I remember, not to throw that card out there, but I used to call him the Black Christian McCaffrey. That's exactly what he was in the same backfield that, you know, he backed up Christian McCaffrey for 2 years and still put up 1,000, you know, over those 2 years. So I'm telling you, man, this guy can ball. He can play. He just needed to be healthy. And by them basically, you know, if you want to call it redshirting him last year as a rookie, basically putting him on the PUP list. This was to get him, you know, squared away, get his leg back. No rush. He already had. But anytime you can get a productive player like that, you know, a guy that rushes for over 2,000 yards in a season in college and at a major, major school, you can get a guy in the fourth round. That's a steal. So you just let him sit and rehab, get himself together. And yeah, if him and Darius are healthy,
that's what I'm saying.
The future could be now.
Yeah.
It could be real interesting. You know, because let's face it, guys, every team that has a really good rushing attack now, they're trying to do it with two guys. You know, obviously Dallas has Ezekiel Elliott, you know, but when they found a backup to him, that was a good thing. It was a good thing for him.
Yeah.
You know, Saquon Barkley up in New York to have, you know, the kid, Gallman from out of Clemson, you know, to back him up. You need that. You need a second back. But if you can have a two-headed monster, that's a good thing. I mean, everybody doesn't have a Derrick Henry. You know what I'm saying? So if you can have two guys, maybe even three, that can come in and keep it rolling and add versatility to an offense, why not? And the Redskins have that for sure.
Washington football team, late.
Oops, Washington football team.
There you go, man. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Look, hey, Lake, I'm here to help you be great. I'm here for you, my man. I'm here for you.
I can still say burgundy and gold.
You can still say that.
You can say
burgundy and gold.
Yeah.
Hey, Lake, man, thanks for being on. Is there anything you would like to add?
Nah, man, just, you know, I just won't say that name no more. You know, now it's going to be in my psyche. Whenever I do some other spot interviews, I got to remember. But, yeah, man, it's Washington football team. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I did notice today that, you know, on their app, that's changed. It's got that W on there now. So, you know, maybe that W kind of goes through the gamut, goes through the cycle, kind of like the curly W with the Nats.
Maybe.
See if that sticks.
Maybe. I can see that happen.
Blake, I did have one question for you before we let you go.
Sure.
That I just thought of. How, with, you know, the pandemic, how is that going to change how the media covers this team in training camp? Because I know traditionally media members of the media will go to the training camp. They would interact with the players. They would get a chance to look at the, you know, the on-field activity. How is that going to change? And how have they relayed to you all how that will change?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to change. You know, from some of the stuff that I've been hearing is it's going to be like a tier, you know, a second tier of people that will be allowed to be out at practices, obviously social distancing. You know, I believe evolving every day, something different can come up and change. But I will say, I think the days of, you know, at least to start this or even finish this season, the days of being in the Washington football team's locker room, those days are over for right now. No one will have access in there. And, you know, I think a lot of what we've been doing as far as Zoom interviews, like, you know, we had two today, Ron Rivera, and we had a linebackers coach tomorrow. You know, we have Ryan Kerrigan and I'm trying to think, Brandon Scherff, you know, so, you know, that's how we're doing this now. And I'll be honest, it's actually pretty comforting to be able to stay home and get your interviews in and do things like that. Not being in the heat. I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you I miss being on them sidelines in Richmond. You forget that. So this isn't a bad thing by any means. So, hey man, COVID has made life hard for a lot, but it's also made life a little easier for some too.
Yeah, because Richmond was super hot. Richmond was super, super hot. So how can folks catch you on social media?
Man, you can just check me out on Twitter at Lake Lewis, and then on Instagram, Facebook, Lake Lewis Jr. And then, of course, Sports Journey. You know, we've got the likes of you guys on there doing a great job.
Thank you, great.
You know, my each all together. But yeah, you know, just doing it with the same folks, Carita Parks, DJ Bland. You know, we just, you know, you guys, we're just trying to do something different, but bring people honest sports news, sports coverage.
Well, like, you know, we appreciate you, and thank you for welcoming us on to the team.
Wow, man, anytime. You guys are family, and keep doing what you're doing. All and right. We'll have some more to wrap up and talk about as this thing goes for sure.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Lake. We appreciate you, my man.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay,
appreciate you.
Take care now.
All right. Take care.
All right. Take care.
All right. All right, man. That was Lake Lewis, sportsjourney.com. Again, you know we part of the team. All right. To a lot of basketball fans, including my homeboy, Will T, the bubble has been lit. We'll talk about the NBA restart after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team.
For ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Sports Journey, with Wole and my boy Will T. Let me patch in Will T. Ray Jeezy's out. Let's see. Will T's now patched in. All right, Will T. The NBA restart started last week. So far, how much have you enjoyed? I know we talked off the air. How much have you enjoyed the season so far?
I've enjoyed it immensely, man. You know, just being able to just turn on the TV during the middle of the day, watch basketball. Not just basketball, but high quality basketball, meaningful yeah. games. You know, in August, which is not a lot of great programming on it during
just,
this
just
time.
Just keep it a buck.
Year.
Sometimes it's boring. August can get boring in terms of sports.
Yeah,
right.
To me, it's been a great thing. You know, having that. You know, having basketball and also having baseball. It's been a great thing, man. And then the games have been extreme. Most of the games, anyway, have been really competitive too.
Yeah. You're right about that. You're right.
Yeah, they've been really competitive, and you know they're meaningful games. So it's been great the past week for me anyway.
Man, you know the first night it was hard to watch. I mean, it was good basketball, but it was just I'm trying to get my mind wrapped around this being an NBA game. The Lakers played the Clippers. The Lakers played the Clippers. It was a good game, but it was just hard for me to kind of like get used to watching that. Nobody in the crowds. It had like a summer league type of feel to it for me. But I actually watched the game today, like in the afternoon. I watched the Suns versus the Clippers. And, bruh, when I tell you, like every time I watch this kid play, Devin Booker play, like that dude is a flat out scorer. Like he hit the game winning bucket on Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, both checking him on a double team. Like, to me, like when I watched that, so like watching that game and how competitive it was and how back and forth, and you had Kawhi was killing it down the stretch, like he was clutch, and you had Paul George, you know, doing his thing, like, and then you see Devin Booker, who's this guy that everybody knows drops buckets, right? And then you get to now watch him on the grandest scale, I mean, on the grandest stage, because now it's like most of these teams that you wouldn't get to watch on a regular basis, one, it's East Coast time, right? So we're watching them now in the afternoon, or we're watching them at a time where you're up to watch them. So you're watching the Suns and the Clippers play in the afternoon. It's like, all right, I can get used to that. Like, I can get used to that.
Yeah, it's great. You know, prior to us getting started, prior to us coming online, on air rather, yeah. You had the Celtics versus the Heat, which was a really good game. And then later on tonight, I believe you have Lakers.
I think Lakers played last night. They played last night.
No, not the Lakers later on tonight. It's something tipping my tongue. Houston versus Portland.
Oh, they've been balling,
which is going to be a great game.
They've been balling too, bro. Like, real talk, they've been balling. Oh, they're on right now. Oh, no, not now. In 15 minutes.
No, right now is the Celtics and the Heat.
Yeah. But, yeah, they balling.
So, you know, you got Dame Lillard, CJ McCollum, and Carmelo Anthony on one side. Then you have Russell Westbrook and James Harden on the other side. Like, it's just too many great matchups for, if you're a fan of the NBA, for you not to enjoy this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm with you. I think it's I'm starting to enjoy it. You know, I was being stubborn at first. You know, we talked before, and I was like, man, I can't get into this. But after watching what I watched this afternoon, and, you know, Houston's just been scoring lights out. Like, there are teams that have been very impressive during the restart. It's like you could tell, like, they've change focus and change gears. The Suns have been a team. Like, the Suns have been balling in the restart. And also the Rockets. The Rockets have been balling. You know what I mean? And it's good to see certain players, like, show out. Like, you know, I'm a fan of Melo. I'm glad Melo's, one, he's thin, and he's looking like, you know, looking like scoring Melo right now. But he's not asked to do but so much because it's still Dame and CJ's team. But you can see him moving better. You can see him, you know, being more athletic because that weight's off. He can do a lot more.
Yeah, he can do a lot more, and like I told you, I fully believe that the Portland team is going to be the team that gets the eighth seed in the West. That's just my opinion.
Yeah,
and we're going to see a very interesting first round matchup between them and the Lakers.
They gotta make it first, man. You know what I'm saying? They had a tough loss. They had a tough loss not too long ago. But they got scoring, man. You got professional scorers. You got Dame and CJ and Melo. Let's keep it a buck. You just hoping that Nurkic is healthy enough. But he's a baller. He's a smart basketball player. High IQ. You hope Hassan Whiteside keeps his game mental because sometimes he can go over the top. But they have a team. Like, that's one thing. They do have a team. I would like to see that team gel with a real off season, And I think they can do some real damage the next following year, but they have to keep everybody together. Like, I think they can keep everybody
together. Another team that I don't believe in getting the credit that they deserve coming off of their first couple of games in the bubble, the Indiana Pacers.
But they balling too. CJ Warren.
Watch out for them.
Warren. That's CJ Warren. Warren. Warren.
CJ
killing.
Warren. Yeah,
it's TJ Warren. TJ Warren. Excuse me. Yeah, killing, bruh.
Like, watch out for them.
Mm-hmm.
If TJ Warren can, I'm not saying keep playing at the pace that he's playing.
Oh, he's playing
at
high clip,
bro. Maybe he's going to have some drop off.
Yeah.
But if TJ Warren can consistently get you 20 points along with Malcolm Brogdon, along with Victor Oladipo, and then if Sabonis comes back, it's a dangerous team right there.
No,
very dangerous
very
team.
Dangerous.
I don't think any team in the East wants to match up with.
Not with a team
in the East they'll have a tough time matching up with.
Yeah, definitely not a team that – they're a team that because they're playing too. They're just playing ball at too much of a high level, and they're well coached, right? Like, they're a well coached team too. So, like, there's not many teams that want to go against that ball club. But it's time to go to break. The defending champions, Washington Nationals, have started the season 3-4. Kevin Nibley from Talk Nets will join the show to discuss this after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The Ages.
Yeah, dig.
Deuces.
Bad boy, baby. We the last standing. Check the record. Check the score. The band. The next generation of bad.
I'm back and I'm hitting them hard. Thrust on sag. I don't need no push up bra. Chick, you mad? Bad's got a brand new car. Drop top in the hood. I'm the ghetto superstar. Breathe. Pop bottles and roll up murky. Bad strong off chicks like I'm Hercules. You got a problem? Come see the girl. That's I right. Solve them. Big belly women. We starve them. Dudes.
Nobody gave a damn, no one gave a hand.
That's right.
Made man, made the band. Wave your hands. Yeah. Rocks on the watch. I think I'm about to blaze the band. Elegant Ness, you know I'm here to say the land. Don't try to lie, say the liquor's what made you ram. Go somewhere and be a maintenance man, a janitor. Dog, don't blame me, blame your manager. Keep your hands on my pockets, boy. Yeah. Franchise like I play for the Rockets, boy. Who shot your Biggie Small, Tupac, you boy. Ready to die, all eyes on the project, boy. Like, I put something in your biceps, boy. I can't help it, I'm a violent boy.
All I hear is bad boy, you down with baseball, boy.
Here we go, hopping out the G5 wagon. G-coated, Reese Bowes and T-Swaggin. Running game on your chick. Your boy's a pimp. I need the ones with no type of common sense.
That about it. That
if you find it, then throw it up. Got that fire and you ready to light it, then tote it up.
That's gangsta.
Don't make me spank of you. Running that water now, your life is in danger. Ride with the under frail and beef brangers. Picture
baby.
A clown try to carry me. It won't happen. I won't let you haters worry me. I'm out till they bury me. When they do, I can't wait to see Barry B.
All I hear is that bad boy, that bad boy beat down with the baseball bat because these dudes ain't never killed nothing. I'm afraid you want his head, put a couple in his coffin. Lord forgive me, but these dudes is playing with the boss, man. You don't like, and you bring your cousin, then homeboy, that's y'all, man.
Let's
man,
go.
I got it all playing. Diddy father the game.
I'm here,
bad,
baby.
But not a boy, I got a part of his name.
Let's go.
I'm hungry, I see you slipping, then it's off with the chain. Your head harder than wood, and I'm calling your friend, you're done. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. I
mean
eat, shh, and sleep, yeah, I lay with them things. Bad boy, when you're in the
bad
so
boy,
don't
baby.
Play with the team.
Don't play with us.
Bad boy, so don't play with the team.
Bad boy, baby.
Bad boy. So don't play with the team.
You know what time it is.
All right. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, now part of Sports Journey with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy is out. Right now, we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. What's going on, Kev?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing good. We're doing good.
Great. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Hope you guys are staying safe. It's the first time we've talked since all the craziness. I hope you guys are doing well.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm doing well.
I lost that.
Yeah, I lost a lot of weight. This has been good. Like, COVID's been good for me. So, Kev, the Nets currently are 3-4. Broadly, what are your thoughts on the Nets season so far? I know it's early, but what are your thoughts?
I think all things considered, it's gone pretty okay. I mean, if you would have told me that Strasburg wouldn't have pitched a game yet and Soto wouldn't have had a nap out yet, you know, I mean, 3-4 hopefully, you know, they can hold on tonight against the Mets to get back to 4-4. You know, that's not so bad, all things considered. You know, I think obviously it seems as if the summer training, you know, it's been a little bit of a sloppy baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen them kick the ball around the field a little bit. You know, and it seemed like the first couple games, it took a while for their lineup to get their timing back. But, you know, the last few games, last two against Toronto and then tonight, scoring 5 as we talk right now, you know, the lineup seems to be settling in. And I think when you add Soto back into that mix and when you know, hopefully Strasburg is back in a couple days, you know, at least by the weekend, you know, I think they'll be in decent shape. And the one great thing about this season is you don't have to be great. You know, it's like 16 teams out of 30 make it. So if you could stay around 500, chances are you'll probably make the playoffs this season.
We'll see.
All right. Kevin, the Nets recently signed Josh Harrison. Talk to us about what his addition to this team, what he brings to this team.
Yeah, that was an interesting signing and not one that a lot of people, you know, were expecting. He, you know, had a down year last year in Detroit and had kind of fallen off the radar a bit. But he is a guy that, you know, while he was in Pittsburgh, was, you know, a very good player. And he brings you some versatility in terms of where he can play on the field. I believe tonight he's in left field. He can also play some of the infield positions. So, you know, basically, I think I'd look at him, you know, maybe, you know, he's kind of like a Swiss Army knife guy. You can put him in the infield, the outfield. And I think what you're hoping for with him is, you know, he was a player that maybe at least 3 years ago was pretty darn good, you know, and maybe sometimes with those veterans, you know, you see in all sports, you know, you put them on a team that can win and they kind of get a little bit of an injection, you know, they kind of get that second wind, you know, maybe playing on Detroit, a team that was awful last year, you know, at that point in your career, you just don't have it. So hopefully, you know, it clicks for him. And obviously tonight he hit a home run. So, you know, maybe Mike Rizzo has kind of been a genius where, you know, last year he got Gerardo Parra and a lot of people thought he was washed up and look what happened there. So, you know, you hope that that Harrison kind of brings a fun veteran presence and a little bit of versatility to the bench.
Don't you miss Parra? Don't you miss him?
Oh yeah, I totally miss him. I mean, I'm wondering. I don't really know right off the top of my head when the Japanese season ends. But you know, there's a way to get him back for the stretch run. I mean, I don't. You know, it's like it's not my money, but I mean, you know, I think they had him last year for about $1 million or so. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously the whole Baby Shark thing took off and they won the World Series. So yeah, I definitely miss Parra for sure.
Well, let's talk about another signing. This was an offseason signing. I believe Will Harris, mm-hmm. the relief pitcher from Houston, recently went on the 10-day DL. If he's able to come back healthy and is able to pitch like himself like he did last year, what do you think of the prospects of this of the bullpen?
Yeah, like on paper, it seemed like we had a good off season with the bullpen. You know, obviously the bullpen was not very good last year until the playoffs, where suddenly, you know, they were able to just find enough to get through. But you know, Harris was amazing for Houston last year during the regular season and throughout the playoffs. You know, obviously he had that bad game 7, giving up that home run to Howie to lose the World Series, but. You know, I mean, if he's able to come back and be effective, you know, and if Doolittle, I believe, is also kind of trying to rehab a little bit or get himself back, you know, into, you know, his velocity was down and they're trying to get himself mm-hmm. back to where he can be effective. If you have both of those guys along with Daniel Hudson and Tanner Rainey, too, has looked improved this season, you know, then you have four guys you know, that could fill out a game from inning 6 to 9, you know, if you need it. But yeah, Will Harris did not look so good his first couple games, and neither did Doolittle. So that could be concerning for the Nats, because right now it really just does look like you have Hudson and Rainey. Some guys like Ryan Harper looked okay, but you know, Harris is ultimately, if they want to repeat or make a deep playoff run, going to be someone they're going to need to be effective.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, now part of Sports Journey. Right now we have Talk Nats, Kevin Nibley on the line. So I'm a big fan of Eric Fetty. I'm one of many few. I feel like I'm like a dying breed who love Eric. I love Eric Fetty. I see so much potential in Eric Fetty. But it just seems that, and ever since, you know, since Strauss has been out, he's taken Strauss's place in the rotation. But, you know, he hasn't gone six, you know. He's more of a, it seems like that stopgap type of individual, or the opener.
Yeah.
I say like opener. Like he's the opener right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why does Davey continue to make him the opener when, like, I just feel like he's never gotten that opportunity through Davey. Davey's always had this short leash with Fetty. Why is that?
I don't know. Fetty was really in their plans this year. Mm-hmm. I think that Joe Ross was supposed to be the fifth starter, probably, and he opted out. And, you know, so then when he opted out, Austin Voth, you know, became the fifth starter. He opened a season in the minor league camp. Okay. But, you know, when Strasburg went down, you know, that Fetty. And, yeah, I mean, he looked really good. I think, you know, there could be something to using him as an opener in the sense that, against the Yankees, and then I believe against Toronto, he looked good for the first three or four innings. But then it seems like, you know, second, third time in the order, once they get a little bit of a beat on him, you know, he kind of falls apart pretty quickly in the fourth or fifth inning. So, yeah, you know, I do think there's a place for him. And, you know, maybe I've talked about this before. Maybe his future is more of a middle reliever like Craig Stammen was, where, you know, you get a guy that could come in and give you two or three innings in a game where you maybe the starter has to leave early, like I used Mara Petit used to be on the Giants, something like that, like a mid-innings pitcher who can maybe pull a game back for you. You know, if you're down early, you can settle it down for three, four innings and keep you in it. But, you know, it doesn't look right now like his prospects of being like a real impact starting pitcher are going to be there, but you know, he's still youngish and things can change sometimes. So
yeah, definitely not with the Nets. I know that definitely not with the Nets, because Davey don't like him for some strange. Because to me, Austin Voth is not that much better than Fetty, and for some strange reason, he's allowed to go six. Like when I look at Austin Voth, I don't even think he's that good. I don't know. Like I could be biased. I think Fetty is good. Like I have a thing. Like I think Fetty, once he's good, like he had a no hitter and he took him out. Like dude had a no hitter and he took him out like last year. Like I don't. That's my thing. It's like, all right, you don't like him, and he didn't. It wasn't like he threw 100 pitches. You took him out when he threw like 70. I want to say it was like 70 or 80 pitches. Like and that was six. It's like you just took him out early.
It's tough. I mean, Fetty seems like a guy, you know, at this point, he's not throwing anything behind you on. He's pitching to contact.
Yeah,
and when it's working, you know, you've seen it a couple times this year, at least for a couple innings here and there. When it's working, it's throwing bowling balls and guys are just hitting ground balls, you know. But the problem with guys like that, once, you know, their margin for error is so small, sure, you know, that pitch down the middle that looks good to a hitter that ends up, you know, with late movement that becomes a weak ground ball when, you know, you don't get that late movement. It's a meatball and it's in the seats, you know, or it's hit really hard. So, you know, I think there's something there with Fetty, and hopefully, you know, to be honest, I don't have his age right off the top of my head, but I want to say like 26, 27, something like that. You know, there have been plenty of pitchers who don't figure it out until then.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think, you know, he was a number one first round draft pick. So, you know, there's a chance, but it doesn't look like he's going to be cracking the rotation here anytime soon if everyone's healthy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I definitely agree. All right, so Juan Soto's going to like we mentioned, Juan Soto will be coming back to the lineup. How will that impact the lineup? That's one. Secondly, who will that impact the most within the lineup?
Oh, it'll impact everyone. You know, I think obviously, if you were to do some kind of Nats preseason, expectations before, all the craziness of the virus and whatnot. I mean, the Nats look pretty good on paper, but everyone would have said, you know, the thing they were missing the most was Anthony Rendon's bat. They never truly replaced that. So, you know, you're missing Anthony Rendon's bat, and then to be missing Juan Soto's bat, you know, that's a huge, you know, and they didn't even have Howie for a couple games this season. Yeah, you put Soto in there at three or four, depending how they want to do it. you know, that makes everyone better. You know, that gets Turner more pitches, Eaton more pitches. You know, they don't want to start putting guys on base in front of, you know, Soto at four, where the last few games, you know, you have, and no disrespect, I mean, Cabrera's been nice. You know, he's had some good games for us so far this season. But, you know, it's a lot different having, say Kendrick and Soto at 3-4, like maybe Thames at 5, versus, having Asdrubal Cabrera and Starlin Castro and guys like that as your 3-4 hitters. Ideally, you'd rather have them in the 5-6-7 hole, you know, and all that. So, you know, having Soto back is going to be make a huge impact for this offense.
Will, do you got a question?
I did, but I lost it. It was on the tip of my tongue. I lost it.
I was going to ask about Starlin Castro, actually.
Go ahead.
So my thing about Starlin Castro with Soto coming back, does that make him better? He's getting hot. So I just feel like they've lost. Obviously, they lost Rendon. We know what Starlin Castro can do. He did with the Yankees. He did with the Marlins. I mean, with the Cubs as a youngster. He has potential with the bat. Does that help out? Like, does that help out Starlin Castro if you have Juan Soto and how hot Starlin Castro is in terms of seeing more fastballs? You know what I mean? Does that help him out?
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, I think originally their plan in spring training, it looked like, was to hit Castro third, mm-hmm. Soto four, and Howie five. And I think probably the reason why that was the plan is, you know, Castro is a good hitter, but he doesn't walk a lot. He's not a guy to work a ton of counts. But, you know, if you put him right in front of Soto, he's probably going to get some good pitches, and he's an aggressive hitter, and that could really benefit him. So it wouldn't shock me, when Juan is back as a regular in the lineup, hopefully in the next couple of days, to see what they originally tried in spring training with a Turner, Eaton, Castro, Soto, Kendrick, 1-5, And, yeah, I mean, anyone you're going to put in front of Juan Soto is going to have a great season. You know, I don't think too many people give Juan Soto credit for Anthony Rendon's season last year, but the fact is Anthony Rendon hit in front of Juan Soto the whole season, and he had the season of his life and got, you know, $230 million or whatever he got. So, obviously, if you hit in front of Juan Soto, you're going to see some pitches, and they're not going to want to walk you and put guys on base, you know, for Soto to drive in.
Very good point. Very, very good point, actually. Will. Will, did you have something else?
Oh, yeah, my bad. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have anything else. My question was about Starlin Castro and just the impact that you think that he could have for this team during the 60 game season.
I think it's, you know, last year we played with Dozier at second, and then Howie would sometimes play second. I mean, one good thing about Castro is I think defensively he's certainly going to be an upgrade over Howie. Mm-hmm. And he does have, you know, he does have the potential to really be a plus bat. It worst case, he'll at least be a solid bat. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to be whole and be a real viable number three hitter for a contending team. But, you know, worst case, he could be a 6 or 7 hitter and not be a black hole in the lineup, and he can do some things. But there is a potential. I think one thing they were intrigued by is the second half he had in Miami last year was really good. It was leaps and bounds above his first half, and I think he had changed his launch angle. He changed his swing a little bit. So it's almost comparable to when the Nats got Daniel Murphy. At least that's what they're hoping. Murphy never hit like he did for us with the Mets, but we kind of got him right as he changed his swing, and he's becoming a different kind of hitter. And I don't know if Starlin Castro is going to have that kind of career renaissance, but that's the hope. I think Mike Rizzo feels like he saw something change, and that we were he's going to be able to score Castro on a relatively cheap, I think it's like 2 years, $10 million deal, and he's going to way outperform that contract. So that's the hope. But the good thing with Castro is even if he doesn't, even if he just plays a solid second base and you can hit him seventh, he's a solid addition to the lineup. And in a way, the rule changes where we added the DH really simplifies things. You know, you can just stick Castro at second every day, and then you can put Howie at DH. You don't have to worry about sitting Castro for Howie. It makes it a lot more simple for Davey to fill out the lineup.
I will say this, though, about Castro. As an Oriole fan, Man, I've seen enough of them with the Yankees, and I know the Yankees have like that funny ballpark where everybody can hit. When everybody can hit, even when you suck, you can hit. Castro, like, even in New York, like, in terms of going the other way, you know, using the whole field, like, he's actually a good hitter. Like, I think he gets. I don't know if like people understand the importance of his signing in terms of when you lose a guy like Rendon, to have a guy who is good with the bat. He's not Rendon good, but he's good with the bat. And defensively, yeah. He's always been the stalwart defensively. You know, even though he's older, he's still solid defensively. He had a couple of errors at the beginning of the season, but, you know, just trying to get his feet wet. But in terms of his reputation, he's always been an outstanding defender. And then you add his bat, he's a good bat. So I just think that his signing, I think they got him. I give Rizzo a lot of credit to get him at that price, what he can be for that team. Especially if Juan Soto was going good, and like you mentioned before, like having Juan Soto as protection for him to get easier pitches, I think that definitely that could be a real steal, like a very big steal.
It definitely has that potential, and you know he's certainly a solid hitter. And I don't have it right in front of me, but if you know if for any baseball nerds out there, go to Baseball Reference and take his first half from last year versus second half, and his second half, I believe. He hit for a lot more power and a much higher OPS. And I think that's what they're hoping. I think they felt like he, you know, did something and he's going to be that player that he was in Miami in the second half. And, you know, so far he's played pretty well. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think at some point tonight he was hitting 360.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been on base tonight. So, you know, he's certainly, you know, they don't need him to replace Anthony Rendon 1-1. But, you know, if he could, you know, be a solid starter every day and get on base, and especially if you know he ends up in front of Soto and he can be traffic on the base pass, so they have to pitch to Juan. You know that'd be great. So,
yeah, I agree. And it's hard to play for a loser when you play with like Miami. It's just, like it's not hard to be motivated. Like it's just hard.
Totally.
Like it's Miami. Yeah. I'm sorry, Derek Jeter, you're messing up. It's like it's Miami. It's not a baseball team. That's a minor league team.
Miami's in first place, though. I think I don't know what the score is in the O's game, but now
exactly. That's my point. Thank you for a short season. My O's are in battling the Yankees. Like, it's a short season. Anything could happen.
It's true.
Hey, thanks, Kev, for being on. Before I
leave. Everyone should go to talknats.com. It's the best community on the internet if you're a diehard Nats fan. And we'll probably have a podcast at some point in the coming month or so. I don't know exactly. But it's at TalkNatsPodcast on Twitter. I hope you guys stay safe and healthy. And thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Hey, Kevin, we appreciate you.
We appreciate you,
Kev. Thank you so much.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kev. All right, that is Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats. Make sure you subscribe to the Top Talk Nats podcast. It's a good podcast. I actually subscribe to it, too. It's on my phone. All right. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes. I'm talking about the Urban Sports Scene and Google Play. Search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. And check out the new home of the Urban Sports Scene, Sports Journey, at sportsjourney.com. Hey, Wilson, we had a banging show, bro. Real people do real things.
Yeah, man. It kind of flew by.
I know.
Didn't even seem like an hour.
It didn't, though, right? You know what I'm saying? You have great guests, man. We talking, you know, we got the Nats. We talk about the Wizards. We talk about the Washington football team.
I mean, there's actual sports on.
I know, man. This is what it is, man. I wish we could talk. I agree. And I wish we could talk more about the basketball. We'll talk more basketball for the upcoming weeks, man. I really wanted to do that, too. All right, man. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
Yeah, dude.
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.